For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is August 28th. Welcome back, everybody, for a new year of learning, our 11th year, Bez Hashem, of learning Chumash. We hope we'll cover a lot this year. Hopefully we'll have some uninterrupted weeks until we get closer to the Yom Tov. So we're up to Parsha Shmini. Last time we began Parsha Shmini, we actually had one class on Parsha Shmini before. Those who are listening online, just listen to it because they're listening right now. So anyway, but we're going to start again from the beginning of the Parsha. We said last time that we would start again from the beginning of the Parsha when we restarted now in almost Elul. So the beginning of the Parsha says, Vayhi bayom ha-shmini kara Moshe le'aron ulevanov uluziknei Yisrael. It was on the eighth day, Moshe called to Aaron and to his sons and to the elders of Yisrael. Now, we mentioned already that the eighth day means the eighth day of what? Of the Miluim. Okay, of the Miluim, which is the inauguration or initiation of the Mishkan and of the Kohanim. Now, even though it's the eighth day of the initiation slash inauguration, it is the first day
for Aaron.
For Aaron and for his sons. Until now, they have only been in training. And Moshe Rabbeinu has been training them, and he's been the stand-in Kohen or Kohen Gadol for the previous 7 days. But this day is going to be, it's now going to turn to be Aaron's show. Aaron and his sons, it's all them. There's no, Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to be doing any of the avoda, any of the service anymore. It now transfers completely to Aaron, and it is his. So this is the first day. It also is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which means they started the Miluim 7 days prior to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, starting with the 23rd of Adar. And that now it is the eighth day of the Miluim is the first day of Nisan. So it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It is the eighth day of the Miluim. And as we mentioned last time, there's something else that's going on at this time, another big thing that's going on. Anybody remember the third big deal that's happening now besides the eighth day of the Miluim, and besides Rosh Chodesh Nisan, it's also, remember? Okay, the Nisim, the princes of each of the Shvatim, of each of the tribes, are offering their inaugural karbanos for the Mishkan, and that there are going to be 12 of them on successive days, and this is the first day. This discussion appears in Parashas Naso, which is going to be much later on, but that coincides with this. Now, in Parshas Naso, we have a list of 12 Nisim who bring identical karbanos in the first 12 days of Nisan. The first Nasi on the first day of Nisan, I remember which one it is? It's Nachshon ben Aminadav, who is the Nasi of which tribe? Of Yehuda. And he is also, obviously not coincidentally, he's the first one to have done what?
Jump into the
Red Sea. I say he's the first one to offer karbonos for the inauguration of the Mishkan. So we have three different sets of karbonos that are being brought. We have the set of karbonos that are listed here in Parsha Shmini, because it's the eighth day of the Miluim. We have the set of karbonos that are brought every Rosh Chodesh, which are listed much later on in the Chumash in Parshas Pinchas. And we have the set of karbanos of Nachshon, which are mentioned later on in Parshas Naso. So we have three different sets of karbanos that are all being offered on this day, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, of the eighth day of the Miluim. Yes?
It's not on topic, but usually when the tribes are listed, it's Reuven.
Right. So sometimes Reuven gets listed first, and sometimes Yehuda gets listed first. When you're talking about the tribes, once you get to Parshas Bamidbar and they're talking about the travelings of the Bnei Yisrael, Yehuda gets listed first. And that, when it came time to bring the Karbanos, then Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask Hashem. When we get to Parshas Naso, Mitzvah Hashem, probably not this year, when we get to Parshas Naso, we will learn that Mitzvah Hashem, that Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask Hashem, what order should he accept the Karbanos in? Should he go with Reuven first? Should he go with Yehuda first? Perhaps a different order. And Hashem told him, Yehuda goes first. So that we'll learn about that Mitzvah Hashem when we get to Parshas Naso. Why should it be that Yehuda was first? But that was the case. So we have three different sets of Karbanos. What we did last time, at the last class that we had before we broke for the summer, we went through all the Karbanos. We listed them on the board. We showed just the incredible amount of Karbanos that were offered on this one day on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, because it's three different, not just three different Karbanos, three different sets of Karbanos that are all coming together, coinciding on this day. This will be very, very important for the storyline, when we get to the storyline between Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron later, when Aaron's sons unfortunately are going to die, and there's going to be a discussion what to do, and Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron are going to have a disagreement about how to handle the situation, where Aaron is going to handle it one way and Moshe is going to criticize him and say that it should not have been done, and it's going to turn out that Aaron is correct. But that's going to be because we have three different sets of Karbanos coming together, and the way that each set is handled is going to be different. They don't all follow the same rules. So we will get to that, Mirtz Hashem, not tonight, but we'll get to that whole discussion, either the next session or the session after that. We'll get to the discussion of the various sets of Karbanos coming together. But last time we did list them all on the board. The Gemara tells us, it's really also a Medrash, it's recorded in several places, and Rashi mentions it here, that this day, this eighth day of the Miluim, which is the first day of Nisan, Natal Eser Ataros, it took 10 crowns, meaning that this first day of Nisan has the distinction of having 10 crowns. Now, what's a crown? We know that a king wears a crown. We know that we Jews have three different crowns. We have the crown of royalty, the crown of Kuhuna, and the crown of Torah. We know there are crowns. We also know that we Jews got two crowns, Nase and Nishma, when we got the Torah. We'll do and we will hear, we'll understand. What does a crown mean?
Maybe they were elevated to the same level of Kedusha, maybe as far as...
Okay, there's an elevation with a crown. What is the concept of wearing a crown? Why does a king have a crown on his head? Obviously, it's a symbol that he is the king, but it doesn't have to be a crown. In theory, it could have been that a king would get a dot on his shoulder. Why a crown? It could have been a ring. It could have been, we know there are scepters. Why a crown? Why is a crown the universal symbol for a king? Why should a king wear a crown? What do you want to say?
I thought it was because it's usually gold.
Okay.
And it's
okay.
So they just to reinforce the
Okay. Now gold is a precious metal,
right?
But it could have been a golden necklace. It could have been a golden nose ring. I mean, why does the gold go on the head? Why would that symbolize royalty? Why specifically on the head?
It's bringing him closer to Hashem.
Okay, it's the highest point. Right? It's the highest point in the body, which means, first of all, it's the thing that someone can see from the furthest distance. But it also shows that the person's stature has been elevated. They're higher than they were before. Now they are the king, and they are above the entire nation. It's the king is in charge. So a crown is something that shows a distinction, an elevation of that person over everybody else, so that the actual king wears a crown. The Kohen Gadol doesn't actually wear a crown, but conceptually he wears a crown because he's in a certain way higher than everybody else. The one who is the leader of Torah conceptually wears a crown because in a certain way he's over everybody else. The we Jews received two crowns, Nase and Nishma, because those were those when we said those words, those elevated us over everybody else in the world. There was a certain acceptance of Hashem that we had that no one else was willing to have. And that those crowns represented that acceptance. That's why we lost the crowns when we committed the sin of the golden calf, because there we rejected Hashem. The whole symbolism of the crowns was that we have accepted Hashem where no one else did. But when we rejected Hashem with the golden calf, so we lost the crowns. So the crowns show a certain distinction and elevation over anything else. Here, this day has 10 crowns. Now, a day obviously is not a physical thing. It's not a piece of matter that you can place a crown on the head of the day. A day is a concept, or I shouldn't say it's a concept, it's a time. Time is not a physical piece of matter. So it doesn't literally mean that there is a physical crown placed on the day, but the fact that Chazal or sages refer to the day having 10 crowns means that this day, this Rosh Chodesh Nisan, was elevated over all other days in 10 different ways. Now, if I were to ask you before we started this discussion, if I were to ask you to pick a date on the calendar that you would say is elevated over all other dates in the calendar, in the Jewish calendar, which date would you pick?
Yom Kippur.
Yeah, I think most people would pick Yom Kippur as the holiest day of the year. So it's elevated over all other dates on the calendar. And in that way, Yom Kippur is crowned over all the other ones in that aspect, that it's the holiest day of the year. This Rosh Chodesh Nisan received 10 crowns that sets it apart from all other dates, including Yom Kippur, this particular Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Now, it doesn't mean that every Rosh Chodesh Nisan gets all 10 of these crowns, but this particular Rosh Chodesh Nisan that happened in the Midbar when they inaugurated the Mishkan received 10 crowns. I'm going to read them to you. Yeah.
Are they correspond to 10 spheres?
Well, anytime you see the number 10, you're automatically in that realm, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't really understand the spheros. Okay. So, but you're definitely in a Kabbalistic realm when you talk about 10. Aseres Hadibros, 10 Makos. I mean, you're always within those realms when you're talking about the number 10, right? So 10 is not coincidental.
No.
Yes. Okay, so let me read to you what the 10 crowns are. Some are self-evident, just because you know what's happening in the storyline, and some may not be so obvious. So the Gemara says, what are the 10 crowns? The Gemara says, Oso yom notal esra taros, that day took 10 crowns. Rishon lamaisa bereshis. First of all, that date, the 10th, the first day of Nisan, in that particular year, was also a Sunday. So it was the first day of creation. Now, it's not the only Sunday. There are at least 50 Sundays in a Jewish calendar year. So it's not the only date on the calendar that had a Sunday in it. But this Rosh Chodesh Nisan was also Sunday. So it's not that it's the only date to have a Sunday. But when you include the other 9 crowns, this is going to be one of them as well. Because it's not by coincidence that it came out to be Sunday. Hashem wanted that the first day of the Mishkan also be the first day of creation. That those two things should come together on this same calendar date. So it's the first day of creation, which means it was a Sunday. Rishon l'Nesiim. It was the first day that the Nesiim, that the princes, brought their karbanos, as I mentioned to you before. That it was the first day that Nachshon brought his karban. Rishon l'Kohuna. It was the first day that the Kohanim took over as Kohanim. They are the ones who now serve in the Beis HaMikdash forever after. No one else does, only the Kohanim. So if you're going to go back to when you think about Kohanim and you say, when did Kohanim become Kohanim? That would be this first day of Nisan. That's when it happened. So that's 3. Rishon La'avoda. It was the first day of service in the Mishkan. Now, the truth is, the previous 7 days, there was service going on in the Mishkan as they were training Aaron and his sons. But as Rashi explains over here, it was the first day that they offered the regular offerings that the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash does. What are the daily offerings called?
Tamid.
This was the first day of the Karban Tamid. Then the previous 7 days, although they were starting the use of the Mishkan in order to train Aaron, but no Tamid was brought. This is the first day of the regular service of the Mishkan. So that's 4 crowns. Rishon Liridas Ha'esh. It was the first day that fire, which we haven't learned yet, is going to come down from heaven and consume the offerings. This is the first day that's going to happen. It's not the only time it's going to happen, but it is the first time that it is going to happen. That's five. Rishon la'achilas kadoshim. It's the first day of eating kadoshim, eating karbonos. Now again, even though karbonos were eaten during the previous 7 days, but this is the first day that it's done in the way that it will be done forever after, in the normal way. As Rashi explains, again, in the Gemara over here, as Rashi explains, that it's the first time that they were eaten b'mechitza in the proper place where they needed to be eaten. Until now, they were eaten in a broader area. They weren't limited to being only eaten in a specific place, but now they have to be eaten in specific places. We've talked about different types of karbanos can only be eaten in specific places. So that this is the first day that you have that limitation. Rishon, Lishkon, Shechina, or I think it's, they change it over here. Rishkon le. Yeah, okay, there's a little bit of a discussion here. Lishkon Shechina means it's the first day that the Shechina dwells in the Mishkan. Till now, the Shechina did not rest in the Mishkan. We haven't even gotten to it yet. We'll see later that there's going to be a little bit of a problem with the Shechina coming down. And Moshe and Aaron are going to have a discussion about it. But the Shechina is going to come and rest in the Mishkan, which will be represented by a cloud. That's how they'll know that the Shechina came. Rishon Levarech Es Yisrael. This is going to be the first day of benching, of giving a bracha or duchening to the Jewish people. Aaron is going to give the Jewish people a bracha here. Moshe will also, but Aaron is going to give the Jewish people a bracha over here, and that has not happened yet. Yes?
So is this following after the Rishon the Breshis? Are we basically tracing these things in temporal order? Like the... When we get past the Breshis, when we get past the Nasi, we've got Avoda, and then the fire coming down.
Yeah, I'll go back and list them again.
And then the eating, and then the it sounds like it's proceeding in order.
It could be. I didn't
it's
think
kind
about
of random.
I hear you. I didn't go through to see if there was any order. Let's finish it and we'll see. We'll put it up on the board. We'll go through it. Let me just finish the list over here. Rishon the Isser Habamos. It is the first time that now they're not allowed to bring karbanos anywhere else. A bama, a personal altar, is now prohibited. Because now that they have the Mishkan, they must use the Mishkan. Till now, they wanted to bring a karban. You can make your own, build your own altar, and bring a karban. Now the Mishkan exists, can't do that anymore. And finally, Rishon L'chadashim. It was the first of the months. It wasn't just Rosh Chodesh. It was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Now, this wasn't the first Rosh Chodesh Nisan. When was the first Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Back in Egypt. That was the first mitzvah we got.
The first commandment.
Right. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. So the Jews already know about Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This is not the very first Rosh Chodesh Nisan, but it is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So just like the first, it was a Sunday. It's not the only Sunday. But Hashem made these all other eight things come together with the first day of the week and the first month of the year, the first Rosh Chodesh of the first month. So it's all firsts. That's all coming together on this day. Yom Kippur, although I think we would all agree we can call it crowned with being the holiest day of the year, it's not a first. Yom Kippur comes out on what date of the month?
The
10th. Rosh Hashanah would be a first, right? Yom Kippur is not a first. It's the 10th day of the month. It's not the first. Well, it depends how you count the months, but it's not Rosh Chodesh. This is a first. This is a day or a date of firsts. And that's all the crowns that it has. Sunday, the first Rosh Chodesh, the Rosh Chodesh of the first month. And then all the other firsts that we have over here. So let me put them up on the board so we have them. I didn't think of the order. Could be the order does make a difference here. Judging from past experience, this list will stay up for a while because we're probably going to need it next week. That's fine. That's fine.
We're
not
for all my spots. Do not erase.
That's it. No, if it does, we'll put it back up.
So, so the first one is it's Sunday. So we'll call it day of the week. It means all firsts. In fact, we can't even do it. Let's do it this way. Let's do first. So we have day of the week. What's that? Did you write down as you went?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Oh, good. Okay.
Nisham.
Okay. Four of the Nasi. Nasi. Sacrifices. It's not really sacrifices. It's really offerings. So.
But the emphasis is on the Nasi.
Right. Okay. That's true. First Nasi. Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Nisham the Kohana.
We'll put down Karbanos in parentheses. What did you say?
Risha the Kohana.
Okay. For the Kohen.
To call the Avada.
Okay. For?
Risha la Avada.
For service. Okay, Avada. I'll put the parentheses service. Okay.
Risha la Esh. Fire okay. Come down.
Fire from heaven. Capital H. Okay. The eating karbanos.
How had I spoke before?
Karbanos. Okay. Okay. For the Shechina, we'll call it Hashem's present. Well,
I should go.
Okay, Shechina. We'll call it Shechina. Okay. Okay. For
bracha, maybe
we'll call it blessing. Okay, call it. Okay.
Rishon Lisa Habamas.
Okay. No bamos.
Yeah. Right.
No bamos. And then 10 is the first Rosh Chodesh, or first month of Rosh Chodesh. Mm-hmm.
Rabbi,
yes.
So when you say the first day of eating the karbanos, is that meaning in that place? Whereas before, when they brought karbanos, they did eat them, but it's the first time that it was eaten in the Mishkan? Or did they not eat the karbanos in the other locations?
They did eat the karbanos. They did eat them in the first 7 days, but they didn't have to do it in that location. Now, even though it does say that Aaron and his sons were not supposed to leave the area of the Mishkan in those first 7 days, even though that's true, but it was not a prohibition against eating the karbanos elsewhere. That was not the issue. It was they had to remain where they were because they were being inaugurated, initiated. Moshe Rabbeinu also had to eat.
So all karbanos after the existence of the Mishkan were eaten in that place?
So it depends on the type of carbon. Some karbanos need to be eaten in the courtyard of the Mishkan. Other karbanos could be eaten in the what would be equivalent to the city of Yerushalayim, which in the time of the Mishkan was the camp of the Levim. But there is a limitation. There are boundaries for where you can eat your karbanos.
Isn't it the way it said, eating kachim? So it's making a specific statement there about, isn't that what you said?
Yeah, but the word kachim is synonymous with karbanos. The anything that is sanctified for the Beis HaMikdash is called kachim.
It doesn't refer to the eating that's done by the Kohanim specifically?
No.
Anybody eating it anywhere.
Yeah, a non-Kohen can eat karbanos too, but now we're limited where we can eat it.
And you'd still call it kachim if it were eaten in the city of Yerushalayim by somebody giving it to Torah or something.
Yeah,
like that.
When you eat a carbon pesach, you're eating kachim.
Okay.
Yeah. So these are the crowns of the first day of Nisan, but it's not just the first day of Nisan. These are the crowns of the eighth day. Now, the startling thing is that all of these are firsts. That's what they are. They're all firsts. Mm-hmm.
And the Gemara emphasizes that Rishon, it's all firsts. And yet, it's the eighth day. The Torah doesn't call it the first day. The Torah calls it the eighth day. See, the Torah could have done this. We had 7 days of training. It's fine, of the Miluim. Then the Torah could have said that those 7 days are over. Now we begin a new count. And the new count is we're starting the count of regular service. So in the Torah, we were just in training. So that was the, you know, those were the, you'll excuse the analogy, those were the exhibition games. Mm-hmm. Right? Now we're starting the season. Now we're right? So it's the first day. Mm-hmm. It's not the eighth day. It's the first day. Till now it was just training. And now we're starting. So, but the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah calls it the eighth day. So the Torah is connecting this to those 7 days of training. The Torah is not looking at this as completely separated from those 7 days of training, which is a very interesting thing. Now, can you think of another example where you have an eighth that is also a first?
Shmini Atzeres.
Shmini, you said bris?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about it. It's interesting. Good. But Shmini Atzeres is a fascinating thing. Shmini Atzeres we look at as the eighth day of Sukkot. Shmini Atzeres certainly feels like it's part of Sukkot. After all, we had the first day of Sukkot. Let's not use outside of Eretz Yisrael. Let's talk about inside Eretz Yisrael. So you have the first day of Sukkot. Following that, you have 6 days of Chol HaMoed. And then you have the last day, the eighth day of Shmini Atzeres. After all, Pesach, we have the first day of Pesach, then we have 5 days of Chol HaMoed, and then the last day of Pesach, and that's one unit. So Sukkot certainly feels like it's the same thing. You have the first day of Sukkot, 6 days Chol HaMoed, and then the last day, which now you have a complete unit. But we know that that eighth day of Sukkot is completely different than the previous 7 days. There's no Lulav and Esrog. There's no Sukkah. In outside of Eretz Yisrael, we sit in the sukkah for Shmini Atzeres because it might be sukkahs. We have to keep on toggling back and forth, or it might be or not be. But in Eretz Yisrael, the eighth day is not sukkahs. So there's no lulav, there's no sukkah. And not only that, but the karbanos that are offered on Shmini Atzeres are completely different than the ones that were offered on sukkahs. The ones on sukkahs are very similar to each other each day of sukkahs. The eighth day is a totally different thing. On the eighth day of Sukkot, on Shmini Atzeres, we don't say in our davening, B'yom Yom Chag HaSukkos, right? We say Shmini Chag Atzeres, or whatever, however you say it, right? So it's a different title. It's a different title. More than that, with Shmini Atzeres, unlike the last day of Pesach, you say a shehachiyanu when you light candles, or when you say kiddush. You say a shehachiyanu on the last day of Sukkot, on the eighth day. You don't do that on the last day of Pesach because the last day of Pesach is still part of Pesach. You said shehachiyanu on the first day. You're not going to say shehachiyanu on that. I mean, why would you say shehachiyanu on the seventh day? It's not new anymore. You've been doing this for 6 days already. It's the seventh day. But Sukkot, we say a shehachiyanu on the eighth day. So it's a new thing. So the Gemara says that Shmini Atzeres is in certain ways considered the eighth day of Sukkot. After all, it's called Shmini, eighth. But in certain ways, it's a regel bifnei atzmo. It's its own holiday. So Shmini Atzeres has this dual property of being the eighth day of Sukkot, but also being its own holiday. Regel bifnei atzma. Here we have the exact same concept. It's the eighth day, but it's also the first day. And in 10 ways, it's the first day, as we have on the board, but it's also the eighth day. So why would it be called the eighth day? In what way is this the eighth day? I mean, we're done with the training. Now it's the new thing. How is it the eighth day? Of what? What cycle? You're saying compared to Sukkot. Okay, no, I understand. But over here, let's, if we can zero in a little bit more in this particular example, how it's the eighth.
So the number eight itself is beyond.
Yes.
It's higher.
Yes.
Seven is Shabbos, and that's the end. When you go beyond that natural, that's what I was thinking of Chris, because it's beyond.
Good. Okay, good. So we'll come back to that thought. Yes?
Yeah, let's say
same idea.
Because the bris for the boy, he enters the bris for HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for all the boys, and they certain connection there.
Okay.
Elevation.
Okay.
Kedushin.
All right, well, it's the eighth day that the Mishkan is being used.
Okay.
Even if the other days, you know, it wasn't the official thing, it's still the eighth day.
Okay, so the facility is being used. It is the eighth day of the facility being used. It's also the eighth day that the Kohanim are involved, even though they weren't the ones doing the service, but they were eating the karbanos. I mean, they were involved. So it is, if you talk to Aaron and his sons, yeah, the eighth day is definitely more exciting. I mean, it's the main event, but they've been involved the past 7 days. It's not like they were, you know, out doing other things. They were here in the Mishkan the past 7 days. Yeah.
I think on a simple level, calling it the eighth day validates everything that's been done for the preceding seven. Instead of treating it as if Moshe wasn't really doing anything and nobody was really doing anything, you know, it gives honor to all the preceding 7 days and all the people who were doing things.
Okay, so it shows that the preceding 7 days were actually valuable.
Yeah.
They weren't just done and now discarded. They are important. Now, the concept of the number eight, which you can't escape in this parsha. The name of the parsha is Shmini, is the eighth. So whatever you're going to say about the number eight is going to have to find expression in this parsha. So we know, especially from Hanukkah, which is really where the number eight gets a lot of press and a lot of attention. So we know that the number eight represents something above this world, that you have. The seven is the complete cycle of this world. Now, within seven, you have six that are mundane, and the seventh one is holy. That's Shabbos. But they are all within this world. And the eighth represents something beyond, something above, something supernatural, above this world, which is a Hanukkah, which is representing a miracle, a supernatural miracle, is represented with the number eight. So the fact that Hashem had a seven-day inaugural or initiation time for the Mishkan and specifically wanted it to begin on an eighth means that the Mishkan actually is represented by the number eight, or the number eight is represented by the Mishkan, meaning the Mishkan is, I don't know if you want to use the word infused with the number eight, or in some way it is connected to this concept of eight. Then that is what the symbolism of the eighth day and the fact that we have the Mishkan and the eighth day connected. So we have this symbolism. So if number eight represents something supernatural, if number eight represents miraculous and supernatural, then the Mishkan, its functioning, its existence, its ability to do what it's supposed to do is predicated on that concept of the number eight. It is supernatural. It is above the ordinary. Now, we've discussed this many times, that there were things in the Mishkan that were always supernatural. The Aron, the Ark, existed in a supernatural space. It did not follow the laws of matter. And many other things that were, as it says in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, that there were these constant miracles that took place in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan as well, that were inexplicable in a typical physical world, and they defy the natural world. The Mishkan exists on that plane, so that you always have this supernatural element to the Mishkan. The fire is going to come down from heaven. That fire is going to remain on the Mizbeach at all times. Even when they travel, it's going to remain there. They're going to have to cover it when they travel, but when they cover it, we're going to learn this later on, it should be extinguished because there's no oxygen. But it's gonna be fine. They're gonna cover it with a metal bowl, a metal pot, and it's gonna be fine. And there's gonna be something supernatural about that. There aren't gonna be any flies, despite the fact that there's so much blood and guts and all that. No flies, no maggots, nothing like that ever happened in the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash. The one of the miracles was that the smoke that came up from the Mizbeach and from the Ketores, it didn't get blown away by the wind, even though it was outdoors. It was outdoors and there were breezes. Never. It just went straight up. It was never affected by any of this. Whenever it rained, now in the Midbar it probably did not rain, but even in the Beis HaMikdash, when it did rain, of course, in Yerushalayim it does rain seasonally, when it rained, the fire would never go out. The rain would not affect the fire. There were many miracles that took place regularly. Hashem could have made a Mishkan and a Beis HaMikdash that didn't require miracles. It could have been just a regular physical place that was holy. That would be represented not by the number 8, but by the number
7.
Right, that would be like Shabbos. We have Shabbos in a physical world, but it's not mundane. It is sanctified. It is holy, but it's in a physical world. The 8 means that Hashem wanted the Mishkan/Beis HaMikdash to exist on a supernatural plane. That's the way he wanted it to be, that it would not simply be the physical world. When we come to a shul and we daven in a shul, we feel that we are in a sanctified place, and it is sanctified, but there are no miracles going on. It's a physical place. It's a physical place that we have given sanctity to by virtue of the fact that we have designated it as a place where we come together to daven to Hashem. So we have given it sanctity, but it's still physical. It's not supernatural. The Beis HaMikdash slash Mishkan, Hashem wanted it to be a place that was supernatural. And therefore it is represented by the number 8, even though it's all a bunch of firsts. There we have these 10 firsts, but it's still called the number 8. So we have both things going on over here. It's the first in a lot of ways, but it's also the 8th. It's also the 8th. Right. Okay, good. Now, I want to read ahead over here. I want to keep going over here. A lot of this we read before on that last class, so I'm going to read relatively quickly. It's going to list the various karbonos. But I want to go through them so that next time when we begin, we'll be able to move on in the story to the next part. So, starting with Pasuk Beis, verse 2 on 588. Vayomer Aaron, Moshe said to Aaron, Kach lecha egel ben bakar lechatos, take for yourself a calf for a sin offering, va'ayel le'ola timimim, and also an ayel, a ram, as a completely burnt offering, that are both timimim, they have no blemish. Va'akrev lifnei Hashem, and come before Hashem. So he brings two karbonos, a calf and a ram. It's a chatas, a sin offering, and an ola, and a burnt offering. Speak to the Jews, saying to them, they should take a goat as a sin offering. Ve'egel v'cheves b'nei shana, and a calf and a sheep that are a year old. Timimim, that have no blemish, le'ola, as a burnt offering. Vishor v'ayel lishlamim, and a bull and a ram as a shlamim, a peace offering. Lizbach lifnei Hashem, to slaughter before Hashem. So the Jews have 5 offerings, 1 sin offering, 2 burnt offerings, and 2 peace offerings. Umincha b'lulav ha-shamen, and also a mincha, a flour offering, a meal offering that is mixed with oil. Ki ayom Hashem yirah alechem, for today Hashem is going to appear to you. He has not appeared the first 7 days, but now it's the 8th day and he is going to appear. Vayikhu es asher tziva Moshe, they took what Moshe had commanded, al pnei ol moed, to the face of the ol moed, to the front of the tent of meeting. Vayikrivu kol ha'eda, vayamdu lifnei Hashem, and all of the congregation gathered together, and they stood before Hashem. This was miraculous, that all the Jewish people could fit into the area in front of the Mishkan. That should not have been possible for several million people to fit into this area. This was a miracle that they were all able to gather together in front of the Mishkan. But since it is the 8th, miracles are to be expected. Vayomer Moshe, Moshe said, Zeh ha-davar asher tziva Hashem ta'asu. This is the thing that Hashem commanded, you shall do. Ve'era alechem kavod Hashem, and Hashem's kavod, Hashem's honor, will appear to you. Vayomer Moshe al Aaron, Moshe said to Aaron, Krav el ha-mizbeach, come close to the altar. Va'asei eschat haschav es ol asecha, and do or make your sin offering and your burnt offering, v'chaper ba'abcha v'adam, and then you will atone for yourself and for the nation. V'aseh es karban ha'am v'chaper ba'adam, and then make or do the offerings of the nation and atone for them. Ka'asher tziva Hashem, like Hashem commanded. So now he's going to have to process these seven karbanos, his two, their five, and also the meal offering. Vayikrav Aaron al Mizbeach, Aaron came close to the altar. Vayishchat es egel achatas hashalom, and he slaughtered the calf that was a sin offering that belonged to him. Vayakrivu b'nei Aaron es hadam elav, and the children of Aaron brought the blood close to him, which means they caught the blood, and they brought it to him. Vayitbol etzpa'o b'adam, he dipped his finger in the blood. Vayitein al karnos ha-mizbeach, and he placed the blood on the corners of the altar. Ves hadam yatzak al yasar ha-mizbeach, and then the rest of the blood he poured to the foundation on the bottom part of the altar, which is what he was supposed to do. Vesachelev, vesachoyos, vesayoseres, minachavid, minachatos, and the fats, and the kidneys, and the parts of the liver of the sin offering, hikdira mizbecha, he burned on the altar, kashet tziva Hashem es Moshe, just as Hashem had commanded Moshe. Vesabasor, vesaor, and the flesh, and the and the leather, and the skin, the hide, saraf ba'esh, he burned in fire, michutz la'machana, outside the camp. This is not a burnt offering, that it gets burned on the altar. This is a sin offering. Normally a sin offering, the meat is eaten. In this case, and this is one of the exceptions to the regular rules, the sin offering was completely burned outside the camp. That was one carbon. That's number one. Number two, Vayishchat sa'ola, he slaughtered the burnt offering. Vayamtziu b'nei Aaron elav es hadam, the children of Aaron brought to him the blood, or they presented him the blood. Okay. Vayizrakeu al mizbeach saviv, and he threw the blood on the altar, all around the altar, like he was supposed to. That means, as we have explained several times, he threw twice in two opposite corners of the altar, so that the blood would go on all four sides. Ves ha'ola himtziu elav lin sacheha ves harosh, and then the sons of Aaron brought to Aaron the rest of the ola, not just the blood, but now all of the parts of the ola, and also the head of the ola, which means they cut it up into its parts, plus the head. Vayakter al hamizbeach, and he burned it on the altar, which is what you're supposed to do with a burnt offering. Vayirchatz es hakerev ves hakira'im, he also washed the stomach and the intestines, and the feet. He washed them, vayaktir al ha'ola mizbech, and he burned them with the ola on the altar. Again, that's what you're supposed to do to a burnt offering. So that's two karbanos. Now the other five. Vayakrev eis karban ha'am, he brought the karbanos of the nation. Vayikaches siira chatas asher la'am, he took the goat chatas that was for the nation. Vayishchateu vayichateu karishon, he slaughtered it and he processed it the way that he did the first one. Vayakreves ha'ola, he brought the ola. Vayaseha kamishpat, he did what you're supposed to do with that as well. So we're getting through all of the karbanos. So we've gone through now the sin offering and the burnt offering of Aaron. We've gone through the sin offering and the two burnt offerings of the nation. And now we're up to the meal offering. Vayakreves ha'mincha, he brought the meal offering, and he filled his palm with it. If you recall, when we talked about meal offerings, flour offerings, he has to take a handful out of it and burn it. So he did this. And he burned it on the altar. Milvad olas haboker, besides the ola of the morning. Now this is a curveball. This wasn't mentioned until now, which means, by the way, he did bring the carbon tamid. That wasn't mentioned. But because this is Rishon for Avoda, it's the first day of service, that means it's the first day that the carbon tamid was brought. Here the Torah mentions it as a by the way. It doesn't say officially he brought the carbon tamid. It says when he brought the, and he burned the handful, the kmitza, of the of the meal offering that was in addition to the Karban Tamid. So it's kind of like just, it's a given. Of course he brought the Karban Tamid, because now we're starting the regular service. If you're starting the regular service, you got to bring the Karban Tamid. And it's going to go on without any interruption from now for over 800 years. It's going to go on uninterrupted until, unfortunately, it will be stopped towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash.
800 years. Yeah.
What's that? Okay. That's true. Good. Good. Now, why is it mentioned here and not earlier would be a very good question to ask, and I don't have a good answer for that. But that's a fair question. Why the Torah throws it in here and not earlier would be a fair question. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nivra. Now we have, what we have left is still two peace offerings. Now he slaughtered the bull and the ram, zevach hashlomim asher la'am, the peace offerings that belonged to the nation. So the children of Aaron presented him with the blood. He threw it on the altar, all around the altar. Ve'es ha'chalavim min hashar, and the fats of the bull, umin ha'ayal, and from the ram. What are those fats? Ha'alya, that's the tail, va'mechaseh, va'klayos, then the one that covers the liver, the one that covers the flanks, and the kidneys, v'yoseres ha'kaved, and the part of the liver, va'yasimus ha'chalavim al hechazos, he placed the fats on top of the is that the flanks of the animal?
The breast
of the animal, okay. Vayaktim ha'chalavim ha'mizbecha, and he burned the fats on the altar. Ve'eshechazos, so that meat of the animal, ve'esh shok hayamin, and also the right hind leg of the animal. Heinif Aaron tnufal lifnei Hashem, Aaron waved it in front of Hashem. Waving means like we do with a lulav and esrog. All directions. He moved it in all directions. Again, this is what we learned you're supposed to do with the chaz of a shok, with the chest of the animal and with the leg of the animal. You're supposed to wave it. Kasher tziva Moshe, as Moshe had commanded, those two parts are going to be given to Aaron to eat. That's what they're supposed to do.
Are they heavy to wing too?
Yeah, they are heavy. They are definitely heavy. Yes. Okay. Yes. Vayisa Aaron es yadav, so they did that properly. And then, Vayisa Aaron es yadav el ha'am vayivarechem. Aaron lifted his hands to the nation, and he blessed them. Okay, so now we have the first birchas kohanim, the first duchening that is done. Now the commandment for birchas kohanim is not found until we get to Parshas Naso, all the way in Sefer Bamidbar. Nevertheless, it was done here by Aaron. Vayered me'aso sachatos v'ha'olah v'ashlamim, and then he came down from having performed the sin offerings and the burnt offerings, and the peace offerings. So he did everything he's supposed to do. He blessed the nation. So good. It looks like we're done. Problem is, nothing happened. He did all these things, and nothing happened. What was supposed to happen? Well, the Shekhinah should come down, but also the fire was supposed to come down from heaven and consume the offerings that were on the altar.
Yeah, I'm confused about that. It says they went up in smoke, but only after this do we see a fire went forth.
Okay, so he put them on the Mizbeach, but no fire came down from heaven. They had their own fire, but no fire came down from heaven, which is what was supposed to happen.
I see, okay.
Vayavo Moshe ve'Aaron elo ha'moed. So Moshe and Aaron came to the Mishkan. Vayetzu vayavarchu es ha'am. And they came out and they blessed the nation. And then Hashem's presence was seen by all of the nation. So the here we have the Medrash fills in what happened over here. So there are a couple of discussions about what Moshe and Aaron did when they went in over here. Now, we're not going to have time tonight to go through everything, but we will discuss one aspect of it, and next week we'll lead off with the other aspect of what happened over here. Aaron became dejected because here he had gone through everything and nothing happened. Nothing happened. So Aaron said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I know this is my fault. I know it's because of me. At the end of the day, I'm the one who was involved in the sin of the Egel HaZav, of the golden calf. Therefore, I'm not really fit to be the Kohen Gadol. And here's proof positive. Because we did everything that Hashem said to do, and we did it perfectly. It says regularly throughout this discussion, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, just as Hashem commanded Moshe. The Mishkan was put up exactly the way Hashem said to do it. The Karbanos were brought exactly as Hashem said to do it. There was not one error, not one mistake. Nothing has gone wrong. And nothing happened. How could that be? It must be, says Aaron, I'm not fit. I'm not supposed to be here. This is a mistake. This is a problem. So Aaron says this to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe then goes in with Aaron to the Mishkan. They daven, and now Hashem's presence comes down. And as we'll read in the next pasuk, let's just read the first few words of the next pasuk. Vateitzei esh milifnei Hashem. A fire came down from Hashem. Now, okay, so why did this have to happen? This is something which we're going to have to grapple with, which is that why is it that Hashem would have set it up that this should happen? Here he made all these instructions, and Aaron and Moshe did what they were supposed to do, and yet, at the end, it didn't happen. And Aaron became embarrassed and dejected. And that, and only after that happened, did they go in and daven, and now the fire came down. Now Hashem's presence was known to the people. So one thing we have to struggle with is, why is it that this had to be? If we could blame something, we could say, we could look back and say, you know why it happened? Because they were supposed to do it this way, and they did it the other way. So there was a flaw. They had to correct the flaw. But everything was done perfectly. There were no flaws.
Could it be an illusion to his two sons who brought a strange fire later?
Okay, so we are going to get to that. But it seems that at this point, nothing has gone wrong. We're going to have later on, the two sons are going to bring the fire. We're going to have, as I mentioned before, the argument between Moshe and Aaron, whether they should or shouldn't have eaten a certain carbon or burned a certain carbon. They're going to have that because things are going to go wrong a little bit. But at this point, nothing has gone wrong.
I'm not saying anything went wrong. I'm saying maybe it's setting up Aharon because he accepted the death of his sons. He didn't complain to Kadosh Baruch Hu. He accepted the decree. So maybe this is alluding.
Okay,
to
so maybe we're foreshadowing what's going to happen. Okay.
But if he offered the bull as atonement for his sin,
yes,
was it maybe
the calf really?
Was it his attitude in doing it?
Well, it doesn't seem that way. It keeps on saying Kasher Tziva. It says he did it as Hashem commanded. It sounds like it was done perfectly. That's the thing. It's hard to catch any mistake over here because everything was done perfectly, and that's why Aaron says it must be because of the golden calf. He himself can't find any flaw in any of the things they did over here. He can't look back and say, you know why it happened? Because we didn't do this right or that right, or I didn't have the right intentions. Everything seems to be perfect. Yeah.
So this exonerates him from those feelings. It's like when Yaakov fought with Esau's angel, that was proof that he was, you know, officially and legally the firstborn. And this here throws away all the doubts and concerns that everyone has.
Okay.
Because he's going to be plagued by that. But now when the fire comes.
Good. But the question is, if it would have come right away without this delay.
It wouldn't have been the same.
It wouldn't have been the same. Why not?
Because it was too simple.
I see. I mean, this way it really shows it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I also feel it's almost like a special gift to Aaron. He and Moshe go in and they talk to Hashem.
Okay, you mean there's a little bit of pause? And, okay, okay, good.
Maybe
good.
It shows also that Moshe, if he felt maybe Moshe needed to forgive him by him going with him.
Aha, I mean they're going together. Okay, what do you want to say?
I think it shows that davening to Hashem is important. He wants the davening. He wants the davening from Sadiqim.
Okay, good, good.
And it sets a precedent because later on we're not going to have the Mishkan. We're not going to have Korbanos. And all we're going to have is davening.
Okay, good, good. So it shows that the davening can be just as effective or maybe even more effective than the Mishkan itself.
I mean, there was blessing of the people, but that's not the same as davening to
Hashem. Right, right. Yeah.
I was going to say we need to do Hashtadlus first.
Good.
And then Hashem will.
Okay.
We need to do the first step.
Good.
And tefillah is avodah shebelev. Anyway, you daven.
Right.
So we had to do the first step.
Good. Okay. Very good. So all these things, all these themes that you're bringing up are correct. But we're still missing a certain element to what happened over here, because there's another part to why Moshe and Aaron went into the Mishkan. This besides the fact that the fire didn't come down, there's other things that's going to happen over here. So, Mitzvah Hashem, next time, we're going to lead off with this part of the story, why they went in, and then to address this point of this pause in the action of why the Shekhinah did not come down right away.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.